Hi, friends. Welcome to True Crime with Ivana Estelle. And before we get started, I want to note that there may be a couple background distractions. First of all, it's Football Sunday, and so if you hear any yelling, it is because my boyfriend is in the next room, and you know what? I decided to record on a Sunday. I knew what it was, so. Also, I'm recording in my room and I'm using a different mic, so you may pick up, there's a train that I live next to. I know you're probably like, where does this person live? But so just in case you pick up that, I mean, I've heard that in my recordings before, so that's just something else to note. So bear with me, I'm gonna try to edit this as best I can so that you don't pick up on those background noises, but just in case, don't be alarmed, that's what they are. Also, I was late this week on my episode, so I think it's going to end up being a back-to-back week, just like we're back in the old days, back in time. So, I mean, don't hold me to it, but I'm pretty positive that's what we're going to do because I was just completely off and late last week. With that being said, welcome to the show. And we are in the month of November, which is known for intensity, release, and passion. This episode is only one of those things. Intense. But more than anything, it's confusing because I don't have a reason or explanation as to why this slaying occurred. Today we are covering a familicide. Familicide, for those of you who don't know or aren't aware, is when a member of a family kills their family and usually themselves as well. It is the most intimate, horrific crime because it is a person taking the lives of those who they know best, their family. I know we've heard of famous cases like Chris Watts or ones that are usually about a husband killing the wife for whatever reason, but a murder that includes a husband killing their entire family and themselves leaves us without any answers. It isn't always finances or a grotesque affair. It's an experience occurred in the home, and those final moments are only experienced by the victims. So let's try to pick up the pieces as best we can as we cover the case of the Creighton family. Family. We all think of the perfect nuclear family. Mom, dad, a couple kids, a nice home, maybe even a pet. I know our definition of family is changing all the time. There is chosen family, cisgender families, queer families, different ages. Everyone has their own version of family. And no matter how you view it, the love and foundation is the same. But what has always been pushed onto us is that outward family, a family where everyone just looks quote-unquote normal, is always equated to being quote-unquote good. But looks can be deceiving, and we never know what could be happening behind closed doors. And when there is no one in the family left to fully speak to it, the truth almost goes with that. In High Point, North Carolina, the family lived in a beautiful brown home. Perfect lawn, high floor-to-ceiling walls. It really was your dream place. But around 7:05 a.m. on January 7th, 2023, the home was covered in yellow caution tape. At the 2700 block of Mossy Meadow Drive in the northeastern part of the city, High Point is a city in the Piedmont Triad region of North Carolina. The area is home to about 115,000 people. It offers families a dense suburban feel, and most people there own their own homes. And don't get me wrong, 115,000 people is a lot. Neighborhoods feel close-knit enough for you to recognize and maybe even get to know a couple people that live on your block, but not so close that everyone really knows everyone. To be fair, it sounds pretty ideal, which is why on January 7th, a report of two people screaming and running down the street away from the Mossy Meadow Drive home was startling, to say the least. There were several 911 calls to help these people yelling, But it makes you think, those callers who saw two young people running, did they recognize them? Police Captain Matt Truitt was at the scene of the home. Police were able to get a hold of the two people screaming for help. The story started to become more clear. A neighbor explained that not only were there two people yelling, they also were banging on doors, asking for help, that someone was trying to kill them. One neighbor recalled that a young man at the door was crying out for help and that the potential killer was his father. This young man ended up explaining to police that when he woke up, there was a gun to his head, and somehow he was able to pull the magazine out of the gun and then escaped. Another neighbor explained that she heard yelling and had called the police simultaneously. So it kind of feels like people heard screaming and called the police from their phones at home. And there were a couple neighbors that these two young people were banging on their doors. So just kind of yelling, screaming, running down the street, banging on whoever's door for whoever would answer. And all at the same time, different neighbors were calling the police to call this in. This one specific neighbor said, quote, "I was just like, this has never happened here. Oh my God, what do I do? I just decided to call 911 because I was like, I'll leave it up to them because I don't want to risk putting my life or my family's life in danger." But danger? Risk? Of what exactly? Well, police were in for a heartbreaking scene as they forced themselves into the home. They knew, at least from talking to the two young people, that there was potentially an older man with a gun in the home. But when police knocked with no entry and were forced to push their way in, they couldn't possibly imagine the horrific sight that was inside. In the home, moving from room to room, there were five people dead at the scene, all with gunshot wounds to various parts of their body. It didn't take long to confirm the victims. Robert J. Creighton Jr., 45 years old, A. Creighton, 46, and three children. Kasim Creighton, 18, Nyla Creighton, 16, and Nasir Creighton, 10, lay lifeless in various rooms in the house. On the outside, neighbors stood at the corner, huddled together, whispering about a scene they could have never imagined in their wildest dreams. January 7th was the second year anniversary of the January 6th insurrection. During the time, the holiday season was coming to a close. The political climate was now confusing, but focusing on moving forward from a hard couple of years post-COVID and racial tensions. This was supposed to be a time to turn a new leaf. But in High Point, North Carolina, friends and family of the Creightons would soon be given disturbing news of a family that was murdered. Captain Matt Truitt said at a Monday press conference, "I have been in law enforcement a little over 18 years now, and I've never seen anything of this magnitude in the city of High Point." Chief Travis Stroud followed up with saying that, quote, "We have to monitor our officers now. This was a heavy-duty crime scene. We have to watch out for our own officers and their own mental health and how they push through this incident." To this day, it has not been released the magnitude of the crime scene, but it was believed to have been gruesome. And the young man who was actually the son living there with his girlfriend, was able to give a bit of insight to police of the horrific crime that had occurred, at least while he was in the home. So how did we get here? Who were these victims and who was responsible? The two people that were yelling and screaming and running down the street for help were actually the eldest son and his girlfriend. They were running away from the house and have since been able to stay anonymous. It didn't take police long to rule them out as suspects, with the eldest son explaining, like I'd mentioned earlier, that he was fighting to get free from his father, Robert. It was presumed that he and his girlfriend ran out and that Robert didn't follow. So, who was Robert Creighton? He was the person that his son witnessed with a gun in the home. But he was also found dead on arrival. And in order to get to know Robert Creighton, we've got to start with his wife, Athalia Creighton. I also want to note here that there are different pronunciations of her name. I researched some from news articles, some that were based from the Bible, and I'm going to use Athalia because that one was the most I guess, prominent. Athalia Creighton was 46 years old at the time of her murder. She was born on October 21st, 1976, and was the daughter of Joyce Veronica Farron and Anthony Thompson. Athalia was a first-generation American. Both of her parents were natives of Kingston, Jamaica. Athalia was known for being self-driven and motivated. After graduating high school, she'd even enlisted in the U.S. Army. During this time, she traveled the world and really began to create a life for herself. After leaving the U.S. Army as a sergeant, Athalia settled down in the High Point area and kind of stayed in North Carolina for the duration of her life. She became a certified notary public, which, shout out to the notary publics, I am one too in D.C., a life coach and interior designer. Athalia was just very focused on being a boss. She also went back to school to get her degree in psychology at North Carolina A&T. Athalia met Robert while the two were in the Army, so they knew each other pretty young. Athalia was known for being confident, and she was stunning. She had amazing style, these large brown eyes. She always was like kept together, so it's no surprise that when Robert did meet her when they were young, he was smitten. Robert Creighton himself had a lot of success. He was originally from Brooklyn, New York, to Sandra D. Smith and Robert Creighton Sr. Robert was known as Smiley. That was like his nickname. He grew up very happy. He was always joking and having a good time. He enjoyed playing video games and sports. Things kind of took a turn when Robert was young. His father died when Robert was just 8 years old. And this ended up being something that I'd imagined he and Athalia would connect on, because Athalia was only 46 and both of her parents were deceased. Similar to Athalia, again, Robert went into the Army very young and the two of them essentially grew together. Robert actually began to appeal to the stage. So he was really into comedy shows and TV. I don't necessarily know if it was theater, but just literally being out in public, entertainment was his thing. He actually would host comedy shows while in the military, and eventually he got into chemical operations as a specialist. I can definitely see that, you know, you're pushing your passion and you also work a full-time job. That's very much so my vibe. So, you know, it was pretty normal. And it was kind of like Robert was able to navigate two lives, his full-time career and his passion for the arts. In 2001, Robert and Athalia welcomed their first son, Robert III. It kind of seemed, at least 23 years ago, that life was sweet. Robert was a new dad. He actually entered a rap challenge on BET, winning the first round of the competition, and that essentially catapulted his career. From there, he was seen on a bunch of different, like, television shows in the early 2000s, all the way up to the 2020s. I mean, he was, like, seen on shows from Ballers, The Inspectors, Staircase, Wu-Tang Clan, a couple Disney shows. He was known as someone who was just fun to be around and a hard worker, who was kind and loved his friends and family. After their first son, Robert the third was born, the couple settled in and had their second son, Kasim. Kasim Amaru Creighton was born on September 29th, 2004. He was an entrepreneur like his mom, with a couple apparel brands he'd built up on his own. He attended Ragsdale High School and was known to have a positive spirit and to be incredibly intelligent. Kasim was your typical teenager. He was growing out his hair, so he kind of had bangs that were braids. He dressed so stylish. He was such a cool kid. And when his sister Nyla was born 2 years later, he became a big brother. Nyla's favorite band was Mindless Behavior. I just have to start there because I don't think it gets any cuter than that. She was born in 2006 and was known to be caring and very bubbly. The photos of her and her siblings have her just smiling with a mouthful of braces. She was known to be a great sister and friend. She was so creative and artistic and attended Ragsdale High School as well with her brother, which I can only imagine going to school and your brother is like in the class or two classes above you. It was probably so nice to have that close family unit. She was the only girl of the siblings and was fiercely loved by her friends. There was also so many comments from friends about how outgoing she was. She was a great best friend, and she had such a huge future ahead of her. And then there was the baby, Nasir Peter Creighton, who was born on March 28th, 2012. He had these really cute nicknames. One was like Fats and like Fat Fat. And I don't think it was like to pick fun at him. He really like just had these cute little cheeks. He was your normal, typical 10-year-old boy. He was known for being really energetic and just an outgoing little kid. He loved hanging out with his cousins and being around his siblings. Obviously, he was the baby. He had three older siblings. He was a student at Union Hill Elementary School, and he was known for getting really good grades. He was just such a cool kid. And I feel like it's so important for me to break down the victims of this story because they feel so familiar, which I know I say a lot in these cases, but these kids, especially like the younger brother, reminds me of like my younger stepbrother and like my boyfriend's younger brother. Just like they're young kids just trying to figure it out and live their life. I mean, can you remember being 16, 18, 10, just innocent, coming upon yourself? And I think that's what makes this case so confusing, because there is nothing to show anything tumultuous, anything negative that had to do with a connection with the kids and within their family unit. Like, with four beautiful children, an amazing home, a couple of established businesses and careers between them, Robert and Athalia seem to have it all. But I think we all know that relationships evolve. They go through transitions. And Robert and Athalia didn't go without their troubles. In 2016, after Athalia's mother, Joyce Farron, passed away, she and her sister, Tanita Farron, had a case dealing with their mother's insurance. This was the Plain New York Life Insurance Company, which is insurer of life insurance policy for Joyce Farron, and they brought this interpleader action to resolving a conflicting claim by the daughters. So Athalia and Tanita were the defendants, and this had to do with benefits that had become payable upon her death. New York Life admitted liability and was dismissed from the case after deposing the policy proceeds with the court. A bench trial was conducted on January 10th, 2019. Athalia Creighton presented her own testimony as well as that of her husband, Robert Creighton, and her brother, Clifford Thomas, and they introduced exhibits. At the close of Athalia Creighton's evidence, Tanita Farron moved for judgment in her favor and the court reserved ruling. Tanita then presented her own testimony, introduced exhibits, and rested. Essentially, it had to do with who was the beneficiary for Joyce and the payments after. But I'm not bringing this up to slander or comment on anything because, I mean, we all know that our families have had to deal with specific things when helping other family members or looking out for other family members. I'm sure you've watched your parents help their parents, and there's a strong chance that that's something that you, if you haven't already, will have to face as well. But what did stand out to me was the fact that during this time, Athalia and Robert in 2016 stood by each other. I mean, he went and testified to support Athalia. Both Athalia and Tanita took care of their mother at separate times until her death. It was a difficult situation. And at the time, Athalia was really young. Like, she was only about 40 years old. So time went on and Athalia and Robert seemed to make it through, but it wasn't without their ups and downs. I mean, to be able to be taking care of your mom in the house, those businesses, your kids, like there was a lot. So just because it looked picture perfect on the outside didn't mean that they didn't have to juggle their own trials and tribulations or just balance of helping their own families as well as focusing on their relationship. Not only that, but it was reported that even before Athalia's mother's passing, High Point police received calls to the home as far back as 2014. Police said that two of these were domestic calls with fights that did not lead to any arrests. In January 2022, police received a medical call and then a request for an involuntary commitment. And this was for Robert Creighton. Police confirmed that Robert Creighton suffered from some type of mental illness, but they were not going to disseminate that information out of respect for the family during the investigation. It was around COVID that things apparently severely took a turn for Robert, for the worse in regards to Robert's mental health. He actually was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. His family spoke of this in his obituary, and friends in interviews recalled Robert being loving, but that he must have been facing some darkness that no one could have thought or considered possible. It was confirmed early on that this was a murder-suicide, that on January 7th, 2023, Robert Creighton took his gun and shot and murdered his wife, Athalia. It was confirmed that she was shot in the head. The others' wounds were not released. And yes, others, confirming again that between Athalia and Robert's three children, he had killed all of them. His eldest son's last memory was his father hovering over him with a gun to his head, preparing to take his life as well. The final person to be alive in the house was then Robert Jr., after his eldest son and girlfriend fled, and he consequently turned the gun on himself. There is no clear ending, no note to show what triggered this, and as it stays, there aren't really any answers. Police haven't expressed if there was any indications to murder-suicide, anything in his search history, and no update of any personality changes in the days leading up to it. Nothing had been disclosed. I mean, I know that there were those three police calls, and we know that they, in the years leading up, had to work through, you know, supporting different family members. But that's about the most. And the thing is, every family has their issues and problems. To me, the case with the insurance policy and Athalia taking care of her mother isn't really what stands out. It's the domestic violence calls and the involuntary commitment call. That's to me something that stands out, as maybe there were more things that were happening that weren't necessarily disclosed. Athalia and all of her children were buried together. Their obituaries were shared, and they basically had everything done together. There were so many photos that were shared of Athalia and her children smiling, laughing. There was Nyla celebrating her 16th birthday, Kasim posing in different outfits, Nasir just so bubbly in every photo. The family was filled with so much love, and not a single photo included Robert. Robert's obituary and funeral shared photos of all of his family. It included his relationship with Athalia and all four of his children. His family wanted to focus more on his life and the life he lived, not the way his life ended. The police have kept pretty much everything else about this case confidential. The type of gun that was used, photos of the crime scene, even any diagnosis outside of the bipolar diagnosis that was shared. And it was clear that Robert struggled with mental health issues and concerns, but that doesn't equate to murder. Like, I want to make that very clear. Just because someone has bipolar disorder does not mean that that results in them killing their family. It is a huge jump, and so we don't know what led up to this. There are no explanations. There is no indication of anything other than someone who succumbed to some sort of psychotic break. His surviving child has kept a private life, and as of now, Athalia and her children are remembered by her friends and family. She is remembered as being a strong, beautiful, bright light. There's so much outpouring love and family compassion and empathy for everyone involved. But under all of that, there's the background thought of why did this happen? I want to note that the Creighton family were Black. We have heard of a lot of familicides, husband killing the wife, killing the family, these cases. And normally they are a nuclear white family. This was a family of color. And though a lot of the reasons why there wasn't so much released on this story was because the police were very tight-lipped and the family really wanted to focus on just remembering the light and love of the Creighton family, I have actually not seen many cases where the husband kills the entire family and that they are of color, and speaking on mental health concerns. So this was a very different case that I've covered in that area. I want to thank you all for joining me this week. It's time for our true crime fact of the episode, which is inspired by this case. Between the 1900s and 2000, there were 909 victims of mass murder in the U.S. This is defined as 4 victims within a 24-hour period. Of those, more than half occurred within an immediate family. Although familicide cases are relatively rare, they are the most common form of mass killings. If you know anyone that's suffering with anything, mental health, that needs some sort of help, if you yourself feel like you are starting to just really struggle, please reach out to your local authorities, your local health center. I also want to say one big support is Planned Parenthood. They do have mental health connections that can help give you that support. Psychology Today is another one as well. There is ways to get help, and you deserve to feel okay and good about yourself. And if you know someone that is struggling, don't let days go by where you don't say anything, because mental health concerns and disorders and struggles, they're like a spider web. They don't just start in one place and stay, they spread and they affect other people too, or not even affect, but impact. With that being said, thank you all for joining me again. Please rate 5 stars. Again, I don't really look at my ratings that much, and I think it's because like sometimes I get some not so nice ones and it like kind of gives me a hard time. But the ones that when I do look, it just brightens my day. So please click 5. Nothing less. And if you have any comments, questions, if you just want to chat with me, you can follow me on Instagram at Ivana Estelle True Crime and my personal Instagram at Ivana Estelle. Anyway, safe journey. Keep walking in the light. Until next time, with love, Ivana Estelle.